You are listening to Covenant Eyes Radio, helping you in your journey to stay pure online. Today we will be listening to a recent conversation I had with Chad and Sarah Markley. 4 years into their marriage, Sarah began an emotional and eventually physical affair with another man. This went on for 3 years until the truth finally came out. Determined to preserve their marriage, Chad and Sarah made drastic changes to their lives, and today they will share about some of those changes. Among some of the underlying problems that led to the adultery was their growing use of pornography.
I had first been introduced to pornography in second grade. I've never been involved in anything that has sharper talent than pornography does. It digs so deep and it holds so hard.
Chad and I did not really have very good boundaries in our marriage to start out with, and we kind of allowed each other what the other person would tolerate.
Our sex life wasn't great when we got married, and so I kind of introduced it into our marriage, into the bedroom, to sort of bring some excitement.
I let it be a part of our bedroom life, and then it became a part of my life when it wasn't in the bedroom. He would be gone on a trip, and I would view internet websites and stuff like that when he was gone. It began to create and then feed a lust that I didn't really know I had. So I began to desire things that were outside of my marriage. And when people ask me how pornography contributed to an affair, it kind of laid a groundwork for me to want and desire things that were above and beyond my husband.
Today, Chad and Sarah will talk about the way God set them free from sinful habits and rebuilt their marriage.
Chad, Sarah, can you first start by sharing how you met and when you got married and those kind of things?
That's good, Sarah. I'll let you go ahead and take the first volley.
Oh, you'll let me go? Okay. Well, we met at a Bible study. I was not even 18 yet. He was 18. I was just a week or two shy of my 18th birthday. I had already begun college because I had kind of graduated early. I was already finished with one semester of college, and I was invited to a Bible study that a mutual friend of ours had been running. And at that Bible study, Chad was leading worship. And the very first night that I attended that Bible study, there Chad was sitting in the front of the room leading worship, and I made my way to the front row. And Chad likes to tell this part of the story, I think.
Well, so Sarah comes walking in with all of her friends from Biola, and so Sarah sits in the front. It was probably the most unusual worship experience I've ever been in, and I've led a lot. And so she's sitting there, and she's staring at me, and she stared at me the whole time. I mean, from the first song to the last song, you know, everyone's got their eyes closed and worshiping, and I kind of, you know, open one eye to kind of see what's going on, you know. She's like totally staring at me. It was pretty awesomely uncomfortable. So
we dated until I was done with college. Chad had gone to college, but
I sampled quite college.
<That's>
so
good.
He was working a job at that time. But we got married just 2 weeks after I graduated. So I was 21 and he was 21.
Okay. And you've been married for what, 13 years now?
Yeah, it'll be 14 this coming June.
All right, 14 years. That's great. Well, Sarah, about 6 years ago, you confessed something to Chad that was both very hard to say, and yet at the same time, it was also the beginning of a new phase to your life and a new phase to your marriage, for sure. You write this on your blog. What I really want to do is sit down across a coffee from you and tell you my story in person. I want to sit across from you in my living room at home and tell you that I cheated on my husband 9 years ago. I want you to hear it from my own mouth and not as gossip from someone else's. Well, we're not in your living room right now, and we're not sitting at a Starbucks. I got my coffee here, but I do want to ask you, what did you confess to Chad that day? How did it come out?
I had been having an affair, an extramarital affair, for 3 years on and off at this point in our marriage. It started when we were married for 4 years. Again, on and off. It wasn't a continuous thing, but it was something that was with the same person that happened over a period of time. And at the end of that time, at the end of 3 years, I had just kind of spiraled down into a really bad place in my life, including the affair was only part of it. I was depressed. I was suicidal. I was prideful and self-absorbed. I was just in a really bad place. I wasn't walking with the Lord at all, even though I was a Christian, supposedly, and still going to church every Sunday. I was with a friend one evening, and we were both drunk. She asked me a question. She said, you're having an affair, aren't you? And I said, no, I'm not having an affair, no way. Because I hadn't told anybody. I told anybody at all. And she was persistent, and she kept asking, you are, aren't you? And I finally said, yeah, I am. And we didn't really go much further into it, but she said, you have to stop. you know, I said, okay, I will, you know. She goes, you have to tell your husband. I said, I will, don't worry. And at this point, I'd wanted to stop. I wanted to get out of it. I felt like there was no way I could get out of it. I felt like I had basically created some kind of a prison for myself that I didn't know how to escape from. And so a month went by, and she asked me again one night, she said, have you told Chad yet? And I said, no, I haven't, but I'm going to. I'm planning on it. I just don't know how to do it. One day after church, the pastor and his wife, and then our associate pastor and his wife, so the four of them called the two of us, Chad and I, into a room after church one Sunday. Chad or I, neither of us knew what they were going to tell us. Maybe we thought maybe they, you know, someone had seen us drunk somewhere or something like that. We weren't quite sure what was going to happen. But one of our pastors looked at me directly and he said, Sarah, we know that there's something that you need to tell your husband. And at that point, I knew exactly what he was talking about. The
right.
friend that I had basically confessed to had told them what I was involved in. And they, of course, needed to confront me on my activities. And so I had a decision to make at that point, and it was interesting because I really felt at that point, even though I was so far away from the Lord and so far away from where I needed to be in any kind of spiritual sense or any emotional sense with my husband, I really felt the hand of the Holy Spirit on me at that point. And I knew I had to make a choice. I could either choose to continue doing what I was doing. I could lie, or I could tell the truth and have the consequences fall no matter what they were. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I could tell the truth and be done. And so I looked at our pastors and I said, do you think I could tell him in private? And they said, of course. And so the four of them walked out, and later I found out they were in the next room just praying for us. But I told Chad, I told him everything. I told him with whom and for how long, and of course, you know, he was very upset. Maybe, Chad, you want to tell this next part?
Yeah, when they called us in, I had absolutely no clue. You know, it's kind of like when you call the principal's office or you get pulled over by a cop. You know, you're never thinking about what maybe somebody else did. You're kind of worried about, like, what did I do? So I'm thinking, oh, man, someone saw us drinking. And, you know, I mean, there were a number of times that, you know, we'd be drinking on a Saturday night. And, you know, I'd come, you know, to church Sunday morning to do worship, and I was still buzzed from the night before. I mean, it was stupid and inexcusable behavior, but we walked in, you know, our pastor said what he did and they walked out. And when I take a step back and I kind of look at sort of that moment, it's kind of remarkable how blind sin makes you. It makes you blind because you're so inwardly focused and you're so self-absorbed. Because, I mean, sin is ultimately, like, incredibly narcissistic. You're so focused on you and so focused on yourself and everything you're doing. And, you know, people ask me before, like, did you see any warning signs? Did any flags go off? And, like, no. If anything, as I look back, I see all the ways that I contributed to it, and I sort of propagated the lifestyle. So, you know, she told me, and in that moment, I was hurt, I was shocked, I kind of didn't know what to do. And, you know, while she's experiencing this head-on collision with the Holy Spirit, I'm sort of experiencing my own, and then I'm mad at her, but at the very same moment, at the same juncture, I'm also face-to-face with the reality that I contributed to this whole nightmare. We sort of created this nightmare that we're living in now together.
Yeah, you know, obviously no one wakes up one morning and just decides to have an affair. Your relationship, as you're saying, was ripe for it in a way. If both of you could comment on this. What were some of those unhealthy patterns and the things that were going on in your marriage that contributed to this?
I think with me particularly, I was really far away from the Lord. I had been brought up in a Christian home, yet it wasn't real to me, at least in this point of my life. It had been real to me a little bit when I was younger, and I had gone through periods of spiritual, like, awakening. But at this point in my life, in my early 20s, I did not really want much to do with God in an intimate way. And I also, I just became very, very self-absorbed, very prideful, very concerned with my own needs, my own happiness, my own satisfaction. And I wasn't looking at the Lord. I wasn't looking at my husband. I wasn't looking at other people. I was just very inwardly focused and self-focused. I was very self-absorbed, and that was a bad place to be, because then I was really ready to kind of do anything that it took to make me feel happy. And because my husband wasn't making me feel happy, I wasn't running to the Lord either, where I should be getting my satisfaction. I wasn't doing that, so I was
right.
A very unhappy person. It's always trying to find happiness, basically. And that sounds like a cliche, but it's totally true. I was really just trying to be happy.
Yeah.
And I was trying to just feel normal. Chad and I did not really have any, or at least very good boundaries in our marriage to start out with. And we kind of allowed each other what the other person would tolerate. For example, if I was going to go have lunch with a guy friend, he didn't care because he was going to go have lunch with a woman friend. I mean, it was kind of like a mutual thing for us. The fact that I was hanging out with one of his friends on a one-on-one basis was no big deal to him or to me. It was just kind of a normal state for our marriage. And we thought everybody else who thought that was weird or that it was dangerous was just being a prude. So I began to get really emotionally close to a friend of his. And, you know, Chad and I were struggling in our marriage anyways. And so here is this guy that knows my husband very well. And so I'd kind of run to him with my problems about my marriage and about, you know, this and that. And he'd listen. And for a long time, it was just this emotional thing. It was just this emotional affair. I didn't call it that. I didn't know that's really what it was. But for a long time, it was an emotional affair. And then it kind of just, it blossomed from that. When anybody is emotionally close to a member of the opposite sex, that question, that's going to come up. It's going to come up no matter who you are.
Absolutely.
You made a good point, Luke, that, you know, you don't wake up and, oh, hey, you know, I had an affair. You don't kind of wake up or, hey, look at, I'm looking at porn every day. It's a series of choices over time. It's like a slow creeping death. You know, it happens over time. And it was little compromises and choices that led down that path. But it was like, I didn't want to be accountable to anyone. And I didn't want anyone to be accountable to me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't want to have to answer to anyone. And you know what?
Absolutely.
I don't want anybody to have to answer to me. Therefore, in my mind, it absolves me of both liability and it absolves me of then additionally responsibility. I kind of didn't want to deal with Sarah's emotional instability. But then at the same time, I didn't want to be accountable to anyone with regards to my own emotional instability.
Also, like I said, I grew up in a Christian home. And yet, when we got married, instead of using God and what the writers in the Bible lay out as what we should be doing as Christ followers, as a compass of how I should be living, I ended up using my husband. And if he was in the same spiritual state that I was in, which was not really that close to God, and if he thought whatever I was doing was okay, then I thought that was okay too. So if he didn't care if I got drunk, then I'm going to go for it.
Well, I know you also mentioned, did a guest post on our blog about this, and then you mentioned it a couple other places, that even in that time in your marriage, that pornography was playing a role in your relationship as a couple, and that was also kind of thrown in the mix of the lack of boundaries that you and Chad are talking about. Can you describe that a little bit, what that relationship with pornography looked like, and how did that escalate or cause further problems in your marriage and what you were going through?
I mean, I had first been introduced to pornography in second grade. I was over at a friend's house, and his dad had some, you know, the proverbial porn movies up in the closet, and he pulled them out, and we watched them, and that was sort of my first foray into pornography. I mean, at that age, you know, you don't know your head from your rear end, and I think it really, really screwed me up. You know, and I remember internet access was like the AOL. I mean, this is,
right.
I mean, whoever, you know, I'm sure people listening to this are like going, oh my gosh, how old are they? But I mean, it was an insatiable pull with regards to porn. I mean, I'm sure the audience of this podcast is more than aware of the feel of pornography when it's sort of like it pulls your soul. And I've never been involved in anything that has sharper talons than pornography does. It digs so deep and it holds so hard. Even when you've been away from it for a while and there's like, you know, something pops in your head, you're home alone or, you know, you're on a trip and you've got, you know, the in-room movies or whatever it might be, whatever that pull is for a person, it's amazing. Even if you've been clean and dry for 6 months or a year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever, it is amazing at how that feeling comes back with such a voracious intensity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a chemical and emotional surge. Our sex life wasn't great when we got married, and so I kind of introduced it into our marriage, into the bedroom to sort of bring some excitement. It continued to burn the fire and stoke the flames that were burning in me with regards to lust and everything that pornography brings in. But it began a whole nother wave, a whole other swath of destruction in Sarah.
You know, it's not his fault that I became involved with pornography. I mean, it's because it was my choice. You know, he could have shown it to me and I could have said, you know, that's wrong. Let's get rid of that. But I didn't. I was intrigued, I was excited, I was drawn to it. And again, I thought, if my husband, if this is okay, then it's okay. If it's okay with him, then it's okay with me. And so I let it be a part of our bedroom life. And then it became a part of my life when it wasn't in the bedroom. You know, he would be gone on trips and I would view internet websites and stuff like that when he was gone. And so it became a thing that wasn't just a mutual thing, but it became a thing that I was involved in by myself also. And what it did to me is it began to create and then feed a lust that I didn't really know I had. I didn't know that it was possible to feel this kind of a desire or a draw. And like Ted was saying about the pornography having talons, just I really felt it just digging into my heart. It was amazing. And even then I knew that there was an unhealthy and something wrong about this. So I began to desire things that were outside of my marriage. And when people ask me how pornography contributed to an affair, that's basically it. It kind of laid a groundwork for me to want and desire things that were above and beyond my husband.
After this whole thing came out, I mean, you confessed to it. Chad, you took all this in. And one thing I take note of this, and I read this on your blog, I was watching this in your videos as well. You said that you were willing to do whatever it took to make your marriage work. And my question for both of you is, what was some of that whatever? The whatever it took, what was the whatever it took to get your marriage back on track again and get your relationship with God back on track again?
Well, it was a lot of things. It was, you know, it kind of went on every level of our lives, physical, spiritual, emotional, everything. As soon as I found out he wasn't going to divorce me or leave me, we decided that we would try to live out our marriage the way God had intended it. I had never been a submissive wife, or in any way I thought that was stupid. Why would I submit to him if, you know, he can't lead? The first thing we did was we began to try to pattern our relationship with each other after how God had designed marriage to be. And in that regard, you know, husbands love their wife as Christ loves the church, and wives submit to your husbands. And the most amazing thing is that we found out that it actually worked. We thought, I lived our whole life thinking that it wouldn't work,
yeah. But
it did. Then he finally was able to be the leader that he should be because I got out of the way. You know, he began to serve me and I began to love him in a different way, and it was just amazing. We basically lived like monks for a couple years. We got rid of our television. We got rid of all our alcohol. We began to just get rid of everything in our life that was in any way detrimental to a forward walk, spiritual walk with Christ. Personally, you know, I went through and deleted phone numbers, deleted emails, deleted every, you know, possible connection that I could have had to this old way of living. I never spoke to the man again. I prayed for months and months and months that God would help me forget all the scenes, the things that were in my head, not just from the pornography, but from the affair. I just wanted to forget it.
It's funny how easy it is to access the cross when you get yourself and all the crap we throw in the way aside. Man, when you're destitute and you're jacked up, there's something to be said about just this simple approach. We sort of sequestered ourselves a little bit, practical things. We got rid of cable. I got rid of probably 50 DVDs. Some of them really weren't quote-unquote bad. And it's like the difference between being in recovery and being in triage, right? If you look at it from like a medical perspective, we were in triage and we were on life support. So when you're on life support, or if you've got a limb that has gangrene, you don't worry about the limb. You cut the limb off in order to save the body. And that was kind of the mode we were in, is that we were cutting off limbs that we knew wouldn't in any way contribute to us recovering and becoming healthy.
That's awesome.
And we went to counseling. We were in pastoral counseling, but we went to weekly regular marriage counseling for a good year. And, you know, it was hard. It was time. You know, he took time off of work to do it, and it was money. But we knew that we needed that support and that accountability.
That's awesome. Your story is so instructive. It actually reminds me of something that I read recently from, of all people, the mother of John Wesley. You know, this is coming from 1725, so we're back in the day. This is what she said to her son, John, about sin. She said, "Take this rule, John. Whatever weakens your reason, impairs the tenderness of your conscience, obscures your sense of God, or takes off your relish of spiritual things, in short, whatever increases the strength and authority of your body over your mind, that thing is sin to you, however innocent it may be in itself." And
Oh, snap.
It is. I read that and I thought, well, I've got some self-examination to do. But when we start thinking of sin along the lines of whatever takes the relish off of our love for God, anything that takes away that spiritual sensitivity and an absolute infatuation with God, that is sin to us. And as Paul would say it in Romans, whatever is not from faith is sin.
You have been listening to Covenant Eyes Radio. For more information about Chad and Sarah, go to sarahmarkley.com or chadmarkley.com. For more podcasts, visit us on iTunes or the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog.